Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty Moscawain has the day off today. It was among the gravest of proceedings on Capitol Hill. On Thursday, seven members of the House of Representatives serving as impeachment managers walked articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump from the House to the Senate chamber. Democratic Representative Adam Schiff read the charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress to the full Senate. Then Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts administered an oath to all 100 members of the Senate who swore to do impartial justice. Opening statements are expected to begin on Tuesday, and this hour we are going to discuss the upcoming proceedings, how they will work. We'll also catch up to major news associated with this story, including allegations made by Rudy Giuliani associate Lev Parnas. Joining us to begin the hour is Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and also author of the new book, Conversations with RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, on Life, Love, Liberty, and Law. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Jeffrey.
Always wonderful to be with you.
So we're going to start by talking about the role assumed in the trial by Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. But first, Jeffrey, if you would, characterize for us this moment in our country's history.
Well, it is obviously a moment of the greatest constitutional solemnity, the third impeachment trial in American history, the pageantry, the seriousness of watching the Chief Justice walk into the chamber. There was that striking moment yesterday when Senator Schumer said that the other senators gasped when the Chief Justice delivered the oath. And the solemnity of the moment hit everyone, regardless of your position on impeachment. And that's why everyone who cares about the Constitution should watch this so carefully.
Regarding John Roberts, as written in the Constitution, when the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside. Other than that, Jeffrey, the founders don't give us much to go on as to the Chief Justice's role presiding over the trial, do they?
They really don't. And Chief Justice Roberts read that very language yesterday in his formal greeting to the Senate. He said that it was from Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6. He was very precise. But as you say, that's it. And the Constitution doesn't tell the chief how to preside or what it means to preside. And that's why in previous impeachment trials, a precedent has developed that the chief doesn't do all that much. He can make rulings, but his rulings can be overturned by a majority vote of the Senate. And for that reason, in the most recent impeachment, the impeachment of President Clinton, the Chief Justice said that he did nothing in particular and did it very well.
Chief Justice John Roberts swore in all 100 senators on Thursday. We have some sound of that moment. Let's take a listen.
At this time, I will administer the oath to all senators in the chamber in conformance with Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6 of the Constitution and the Senate's impeachment rules. Will all senators now stand or remain standing and raise their right hand? Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald John Trump, President of the United States, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God.
There has been so much political rancor in the Senate. Jeffrey Rosen, is impartial justice defined in the Constitution so that political loyalties have to be set aside in a situation like this?
It is not defined in the Constitution, nor in law. It's an ideal. It's a hope. It has lots of people have fought and died for it, but senators in the end will interpret the oath as they please. And the debate that we're seeing now about whether or not it's possible to do impartial justice when you said that you've reached an opinion before hearing the evidence is up to the senators themselves. They have the sole power to try impeachments. We know that they're not jurors. In the Clinton impeachment, when one senator referred to his colleagues as jurors, there was an objection, and the chief sustained it on the grounds that the Senate is both judge and jury. It's acting as a court. So that's what makes it so unlike a regular trial. In a regular trial, jurors can't overrule the judge if they don't like his evidentiary rulings. Here they can and so forth. So in the end, every Senate her will have to look to his or her own conscience to decide what it means to be impartial, and we'll see what happens.
Roberts will be straddling two very different branches of government in terms of decorum, the Supreme Court, of course, and the U.S. Senate. He doesn't give up his other job. Tell us about the contrast.
Chief Justice Rehnquist, again, said that when he came into the Senate during the Clinton impeachment, he experienced a sense of culture shock as he walked from the highly structured environment of the Supreme Court to what he called the far more free-flowing atmosphere of the Senate. And that's a
to say the least
way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you saw both the seriousness of Roberts. He had a very serious expression on his face as he was formally escorted by the escort committee, and the sense of respect by the senators as they stood up and realized, whoa, this is the chief. So suddenly our chamber has been transformed from its usual the raucous chamber to a courtroom. It's a completely different environment, obviously. And the simple presence of the Chief Justice is an effort by the framers to interject into this quintessentially political body, at least temporarily, some kind of judicial atmosphere.
Visually, he was not wearing his robes.
He was. Initially, when he was walking, he wasn't. But okay. by the time he reached the dais and Senator Grassley swore him in, he was wearing his black robe. Okay. It was harder to see than Chief Justice Rehnquist, because of course Rehnquist had the yellow stripes from Gilbert and Sullivan on, but Roberts had his usual black robe on. Grassley tried to swear him in immediately, and Roberts gently made him pause and said he needed to read his formal greeting to those senators, which he read. He said, I'm attending you in response to your summons. And then he swore them all in, and Senator Grassley said, God bless you, and Robert said thank you, and that was pretty well it.
John Roberts must do a balancing act. Is there concern about the appearance of partiality? He was appointed by a Republican president, George W. Bush.
Yes, there's certainly a concern, and Roberts is aware of it. There's nothing he cares more about than the perception of the nonpartisan institutional legitimacy of the courts. He's made that his crusading mission as Chief Justice, to persuade the public that the courts are not just politicians in robes, but they can do impartial justice under law. So that's why he's going to be so extremely attentive to avoiding any kind of ruling that could seem to be favoring one side over another for partisan or political reasons. It's why he's likely to defer to the senators themselves on all contested rulings, from whether to hear witnesses to whether to subpoena documents to whether to dismiss the trial quickly. He won't want to be making any ruling on his own that he knows could be overturned by the majority and that might be perceived as partial. And that's why he's walking a very fine line.
How is his temperament suited to the task?
Very well, indeed. He was, if anyone can be born for this task, and you look at the chief and think, now there's one job I'm sure he never imagined he'd be performing, when he was a lawyer and even when he became Chief Justice. But because he cares so much about nonpartisan legitimacy, because the forms matter so much to him, and he's so determined to be perceived by both sides as a fair and neutral dealer, if you had to pick a chief to preside over an impeachment trial, it would be harder to pick a better one than him.
Jeffrey Rosen, the vice president is normally the Senate's presiding officer. Why did the framers choose the Supreme Court's chief justice for the job? Do we know?
Well, we know that the decision to invest impeachment in the Senate came relatively late in the Constitutional Convention. And for listeners in Philly, go across the street from WHYY to the Constitution Center and see the very earliest drafts of the Constitution written by James Wilson. And in Wilson's early drafts, the impeachment was called a grand conquest of the nation, and it was vested in the a grand inquest of the nation. Mm-hmm. It's in his handwriting, which is really cool. You can see it on the drafts. And it was vested in the Supreme Court, not the Senate. Originally, the Supreme Court was going to try impeachments, but in the last weeks of the convention, the framers decided that was a bad idea because the president might be tried in the ordinary court system after being removed from office, and you wouldn't want the justices, having already ruled on his guilt in an impeachment trial, to then go make a judgment about his criminal liability. So for that reason, they switched the impeachment to the House and the Senate, but wanted to preserve some semblance of the judicial nature of the proceeding. And that was the compromise, to put the chief in just as a kind of representative of the judicial branch, even after it moved to Congress.
So in the unlikely event that the jury, or actually the court, as we're calling the Senate, is deadlocked in this impeachment trial, 50-50, and it is probably unlikely, is Roberts' role then a tiebreaker?
No. As I understand it, and I have not seen the moment at which the rule was changed, I gather and have read and heard that earlier in impeachment trials, the chief did have tie-breaking authority, I think, over evidentiary hearings. And at some point, more recently, that went off the window, and now he can be overruled by a majority. But the Constitution says that conviction can only take place on votes of two-thirds of the Senate. And I don't believe that at any point in history the chief has had an opportunity to cast a substantive vote on guilt or innocence.
Justice Roberts himself has tangled with President Trump on judicial independence. In 2018, Mr. Trump called a judge who had ruled against his administration's asylum policy and an Obama judge. And then Roberts rebuked the president, saying, "We do not have Obama judges or Trump judges, Bush judges or Clinton judges." Again, does Roberts need to tread lightly here so as to appear impartial?
Well, he was very eloquently defending impartiality in that exchange with the president. He was insisting that judges are not politicians. But that Twitter war was doesn't suggest that he likes or doesn't like President Trump in the same way that I'm sure he's determined to make sure that the Supreme Court and its rulings on the Trump executive privilege cases involving subpoenas, however they rule, are not ruling out of personal like or dislike for Trump. But yes, because of that disagreement with the president, he needs to make just as sure that he's not seen as leaning against the president as in favor of him. And I think that's exactly what he wants to do.
20 years ago, the impeachment trial of President Bill Clinton was held. Do you expect that the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump will look in some ways similar?
I guess each, like all unhappy families.
As far as the proceedings are concerned, yeah, sorry.
Right, like Tolstoy says, all unhappy families are unhappy in their own way, and impeachments are probably like that, too. Clinton, of course, it was a sex scandal, and it had lurid evidence presented by the independent counsel. Here we have very complicated facts involving Ukraine, and the story is moving, and new witnesses appear every day, and there's going to be a fight over whether to hear them. So, no, it'll certainly be unique and really interesting, of course, to hear both how the Senate votes about witnesses, because four senators will be enough to give the Democrats the votes they need to call witnesses, and to see how the deliberations
and we'll
take
be,
place.
We'll be talking about that some more in the next segment. I'm so sorry to jump in on you, Jeffrey Rosen. We're up against the clock, but always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise. Thank you.
Jeffrey Rosen is president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and professor of law at the George Washington University Law School. Stay with us as Radio Times continues on WHYY in Philadelphia.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. In today for Marty Moskowain, opening arguments or statements in the impeachment trial of President Trump are set to begin on Tuesday. And we're going to spend the remainder of the hour analyzing the proceedings and discussing the latest news developments regarding potential witnesses, new evidence from Lev Parnas, an associate of Rudy Giuliani, and much more. Our guests are Jacqueline Thompson. She reports for the National Law Journal, and she's joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us, Jacqueline.
Thanks for having me.
And Sam Brody, a congressional reporter for the Daily Beast, is also in the NPR studios in D.C. Great to have you with us, Sam.
Yeah, good to be here.
Lines are open at 888-477-9499. You can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times or an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's get started talking about witnesses. It is, as of yet, unclear whether we will have witnesses. We will see or hear witnesses called to testify. When do we expect to learn as to whether this might happen? Sam?
Right. So there's a lot in flux. So just to step back for a moment, what's slated to happen in the next couple of days, possibly as late as Tuesday morning, is that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is going to release the framework for the Senate trial. So he's been hinting at what that might look like in recent days and weeks. So it's likely to include, it's not totally sure yet, but it's possible that it includes a vote from senators to formally open the trial and then a provision for a vote to call witnesses at a later date. We don't know when that would be. And we really don't know much beyond that. It's probably that it would be just a vote on whether or not the Senate is going to entertain additional witnesses. And then at that point later on, there would be possibly an up or down vote on individual witnesses or sets of witnesses. At this point, the big question is if there are four Republicans who are going to vote for that. We know that there are several who are leaning that way. Susan Collins of Maine, for example, who's going to be a critical player in all of this, said last night in a statement she's inclined to hear more, but she wants to sit through opening arguments and then make that determination. Senator Mitt Romney has said something similar. So that's really the big question that will influence whether or not we're going to have additional witnesses in the trial.
And Jacqueline Thompson, Republican moderates in the Senate are facing an enormous amount of pressure politically.
Yeah, they definitely are. You know, Susan Collins is going to be up for re-election. And she said, you know, why should I agree with Chuck Schumer? He's been saying that I shouldn't be in the Senate anymore. So they are facing these pressures from, you know, their own parties about exactly how they're going to end up voting on this and whether or not they think they should allow witnesses who could ultimately end up being damaging to the president. At the same time, we have the Trump White House saying, you know, we don't even think that witnesses will be called. We don't think the trial will last longer than 2 weeks. But, you know, that's not necessarily accurate as well, considering the fact that we do now have people like Susan Collins and Mitt Romney saying that this could be a possibility for them.
If no witnesses are called, what can we expect from the trial? Jacqueline?
You know, I think it'd be very quick. I think we would just hear evidence presented, what we have so far from the House prosecutors. They would just say, you know, we have this testimony. They're expecting to start playing video of a lot of the testimony from witnesses who were part of those public impeachment hearings. We saw that happen in the House Judiciary hearings as well. So that's definitely something we can expect to see, you know, that kind of testimony that we've already heard before, then presented to the Senate to for them to then rule upon.
Sam Brody, the testimony that Jacqueline refers to would include that of Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union, made during one of the hearings in the fall. His testimony was explosive.
Right. Certainly, Gordon Sondland. And, you know, if you talk to Democrats, in terms of what they want to demonstrate during their arguments in the trial, a lot of it is just Trump's own statements. Also statements from Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. You might recall, seems like years ago now, but Mick Mulvaney said in a press conference something to the effect of, you know, sure, this happened. And so what? So I think it's going to be a mix of past testimony that Democrats are going to want to point to. I'm sure they're going to want to throw up some of those passages in deposed interviews that they held last year, and just letting Trump and some of his associates who have spoken on camera on the record about this fill in, really, really support the arguments that they're going to be making.
Well, let's get to some news of the week. The story of Lev Parnas, an associate of President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Parnas, apparently central to the pressure campaign on Ukraine to dig up dirt on Joe Biden and his son, Hunter, ahead of the 2020 election. He's been doing interviews with journalists. And earlier this week, he made some rather explosive allegations when he was talking to MSNBC's Rachel Maddow about the president's alleged involvement in the campaign to pressure Ukraine. Let's take a listen to that sound.
What do you think is the main inaccuracy or the main lie that's being told that you feel like you can correct?
That the president didn't know what was going on. President Trump knew exactly what was going on. He was aware of all of my movements. I wouldn't do anything without the consent of Rudy Giuliani or the president.
Mr. Parnas is indicted on charges that are unrelated to this matter. But Jacqueline Thompson, what happens now with these allegations from Lev Parnas?
You know, that's kind of an open question. We've already heard from House leaders, Adam Schiff, saying that this is explosive. These are huge allegations that need to be included within a Senate impeachment trial. Are the senators going to allow that to happen? Is Mitch McConnell going to let a television interview from someone who has been indicted be included as evidence within the trial when it wasn't necessarily included in evidence as part of the articles of impeachment? You know, that's something that they could try to block from being entered as part of the record on the Senate floor. You also have to keep in mind, you know, these are just allegations from Lev Parnas. We've mentioned that he's been indicted. You know, you got to kind of treat him with kid gloves the same way we did with the testimony of Michael Cohen. Both of them are facing federal charges. Both of them are now making these claims, and Parnas hasn't made these claims under oath. So, you know, that kind of raises some questions about exactly what he's been saying. Obviously, you can't discount it. But, you know, it is something you have to weigh against. And is it going to be allowed into a Senate trial? That is unclear right now.
Sam Brody, the reaction from the White House to this?
Look, I mean, the reaction from the White House has been this guy is under indictment. You can't trust him. He, Stephanie Grisham, the White House press secretary, said something to the effect of, you know, he's trying to reduce his exposure to prison time. That's a point that has been echoed by Trump's allies on Capitol Hill. Lindsey Graham told reporters yesterday, you can't trust Lev Parnas as far as you can throw him. And I think that's that attitude is going to be reflected, I'm sure, in how Mitch McConnell handles this situation. You know, as Jacqueline notes, these statements weren't made under oath. I think, you know, on the other side, Democrats are going to say, let's get Lev Parnas under oath. Let's have the opportunity to ask him some questions and get this stuff into the record. I'm fairly certain that when it comes to the witness debate, you're going to have Democrats arguing that Lev Parnas should appear before senators in the trial in order to answer their questions and really get to the bottom of that.
Staying with the topic of Ukraine for a moment, Ukraine has opened a criminal investigation into allies of President Trump after the news that former Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch apparently had been under surveillance, again, by an ally or an associate of Lev Parnas. Ukrainian President Zelensky has largely stayed out of the impeachment fray until now, but the Parnas allegations might be a game changer here. Jacqueline?
You know, I think that's definitely possible because it sounds like American authorities were committing potential crimes on Ukrainian soil. And that makes a total difference there, especially considering the reputation that Marie Yovanovitch had within Ukraine, in fighting corruption and really standing up as to someone who can, you know, push back against the alleged wrongdoing done by the Ukrainian presidential administration prior to this one under Zelensky. And Ukrainian corruption has been a major issue for the president. He's been saying, you know, that's why I held up the aid. And then to take away the ambassador who was fighting corruption, you know, it kind of tells two different stories right there. So that's an issue that we can definitely see this Ukrainian administration start digging into a little bit.
And I know, Sam Brody, you are the congressional reporter for The Daily Beast, but I'm going to ask this on the off chance that you kind of have some thoughts about this. How might this affect U.S.-Ukraine relations moving forward?
Right. I mean, it's interesting. If you talk to folks on Capitol Hill who have really been engaged, you know, really on both sides in this relationship, I think it's important to keep in mind that, up to this point, there was really bipartisan, widespread agreement that the United States should be doing more to support Ukraine, specifically in the context of its relationship with Russia and U.S. relationship with Russia. And you know, the Yovanovitch stuff was an interesting for a lot of reasons, but you know, in so much that she was seen as somebody who could really help kind of demonstrate that U.S. commitment to helping Ukraine fight corruption and curb Russian influence. You know, this is just more evidence that there was, you know, were folks in the Trump administration, possibly as high as the president, who did not seem interested in those goals. And what does that show to the Ukrainians? You know, I think on both sides, and certainly the people I talked to in Congress really feeling kind of dejected about how the revelations that have come out of this whole process, how they have really sort of punctured this notion that the United States is a reliable partner for Ukraine who's into help for the right reasons.
We are talking, speaking this hour about obviously the U.S.-Ukraine story, but in particular, we're going to get back to the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. And our guests this hour are Sam Brody, congressional reporter for The Daily Beast, also Jacqueline Thompson, reporter for the National Law Journal, who covers Washington courts and the legal side of politics. They are both joining us from NPR studios in Washington, D.C. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have thoughts, comments, questions about the impeachment of President Trump, the trial, opening statements get underway on Tuesday. We invite you to join the conversation. 888-477-9499 is the number. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So earlier in the hour, when we were speaking with Jeffrey Rosen of the National Constitution Center, we talked about the oath that the senators, U.S. senators, took on Thursday, in which they swore to apply impartial justice in accordance with the Constitution and the law. Jacqueline, considering the bitterness, the political divide between the two political parties, do you see any senator stepping down from political talking points in an attempt to be impartial?
Not for a chance. not a chance of that happening, especially if you take into consideration the comments that Mitch McConnell made, you know, a month ago, and Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. And you see these senators going, I'm not an impartial juror. And they're saying, I'm not an impartial juror because this is not an impartial trial, because they claim that the House process was rigged against the president. You know, the president had every opportunity to get himself involved within the House impeachment inquiry, and he chose not to. He claimed that he was being deprived of due process rights. You don't get due process rights during an impeachment inquiry. You get them at an impeachment trial. So that's what we're going to see happen here. But, you know, the Senate is not a federal court. And that's something that I think Jeffrey Rosen spoke a little bit about. Yeah. They don't follow the same exact rules. And so at the end of the day, impeachment is inherently a political process. And we're going to see the politics really star in the proceedings in the coming weeks.
Sam Brody, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think there is a sense that, you know, some questions I was trying to ask senators yesterday before they left town for the weekend is, you know, do you think that there's anything that's happened that changes the fundamental question here, which is Trump going to get removed from office through this trial? And I think there's certainly Democrats who hope that dynamic has changed, but I think people know that it really hasn't. We have this debate about witnesses, and that's interesting. You might get some Republicans who get on board with that, but fundamentally, I mean, are there going to be any number of Republicans who vote to remove the president? I'm not so sure. So what that means, I think, is that you have McConnell and both Schumer who view this is a critical moment for them in terms of who is going to control the Senate in the 2020 elections. And I think that's really, you know, top of mind for both leaders as they approach this. What's their toolbox? What is the path they are going to go down in order to ensure, you know, they can play this in a way that helps them win in 2020? It sounds cynical, and this is, you know, I think in the absence of a real chance, this and, you know, changes the fundamental facts, you know, the fundamental dynamic here. This is an enormously significant political battleground.
President Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, has said, of course, he's willing to testify under subpoena about the president's dealings with Ukraine. But Jacqueline Thompson, it seems unlikely we will hear from Mr. Bolton?
You know, if the Senate were to subpoena John Bolton, the president has said that he would once again assert executive privilege to block him from speaking on the Senate floor, using the same exact argument that he's used for Don McGahn, which is that if you are a quote-unquote alter ego of the president, then you cannot be compelled to testify before Congress. And you know that court case over McGahn is pending. We're going to get an opinion any day now. But, you know, it's just going to lead to an entirely different kind of battle. You know, if we get Trump asserting executive privilege, is somebody going to sue? Is it going to get caught up in D.C. federal court for the next year and a half? It's a total Pandora's box of different legislative and judicial horrors that could emerge if John Bolton is subpoenaed to testify. And, you know, that just doesn't seem like a very realistic thing that can happen right now. But that doesn't mean that Democrats aren't going to try to make that happen.
Sure. Uncharted territory. Sam Brody, remind us of what Mr. Bolton might bring to the table if he does indeed testify.
Right. So John Bolton, certainly what we know of his role here through the other folks who have testified to House investigators, is he was a top figure whose deputies were working on this issue. And we know him to have been deeply skeptical of the apparent push to get Vladimir Zelensky to investigate the Bidens. He is reported by others to have said this was a drug deal that was being cooked up. So what Democrats are hoping for is somebody who is hardly a Democrat to come in and really detail his misgivings with this process. You know, Bolton's lawyer has hinted, and Bolton himself has hinted at various points, that, you know, he has information that hasn't been out there, that he wouldn't be somebody simply corroborating what's out there. He would have new information. There are probably very likely meetings that he was in that some of the other folks were not in. So what Democrats are hoping for, that this is a game-changing possibility, that somehow Bolton could enter some new facts into the record that could fundamentally change the dynamic here. It's interesting, when you talk to Republicans about it, they say that it's just as possible that Bolton could have exculpatory evidence.
You know what, Sam? I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we're up against a break. Sam Brody is congressional reporter for The Daily Beast. Jacqueline Thompson, reporter for the National Law Journal covering D.C. courts. We're talking about the impeachment trial of President Trump. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. And heading into the break, we were speaking with Sam Brody of The Daily Beast about the Republican perspective. Should former National Security Advisor John Bolton end up testifying under subpoena about President Trump's dealings with Ukraine? And Sam, you were saying they might be taking it positive. They might be thinking a little positively about this.
Right. I wouldn't say that, but I do think what the idea Republicans are trying to get out there is like, look, this guy is, you know, he's not a never Trumper here. He is somebody who you got to be careful with, because if you get him on the stand, there are perhaps things he would say that would, you know, puncture the case somewhat or unearth positive information about Trump. I think Democrats are skeptical of that idea because really Bolton has given all the indications that he would have some damning information about the president's conduct.
Whatever the revelation, though, it would have to be a lot to move the needle as far as a Senate vote is concerned. Jacqueline, is that correct?
Yeah, no, it would be. You know, right now it's pretty certain that the Senate will end up ultimately acquitting the president of these allegations just because of what the makeup of the Senate is right now. You have senators who are allegedly talking privately about how they don't like this president and how what they think is wrong. But, you know, a lot of them aren't willing to just say that publicly. Democrats are, Republicans aren't, because it's going to cost them electorally. We've got an election coming up, and you know, that just buys even more into the entire political process of an impeachment proceeding. Sure, it borrows from the judiciary in terms of it's being called a trial. You have jurors, you have a judge, but you don't have the same exact process in place.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying it is a good thing the articles of impeachment were withheld for a month because, she says, you know, there is more information, perhaps, you know, when it comes to Lev Parnas. Did her gambit significantly further the cause for impeachment? Sam?
It's a good question, and I think it's one we won't know the full answer to for a while. But I do think it's interesting how quickly the conversation around this issue changed when last week Pelosi was still holding on to the articles as lawmakers returned from the holiday break. And there started to be a little antsiness. You saw Democratic senators, Dianne Feinstein, for example, said, you know what, maybe it's time for Speaker Pelosi to send over the articles. It's also notable that she quickly retracted that statement and said that Pelosi should, you know, has the authority to do whatever she wants. But there was a little antsiness. People were starting to wonder, what is she going to get out of this? Maybe it's diminishing returns. Maybe it's time for her to send it over. She held on, and, you know, on the eve of impeachment managers dropping off the articles at the Senate, you have these Lev Parnas allegations. You have a report from the Government Accountability Office, you know, finding that the administration broke the law in withholding, you know, congressionally appropriated funds for Ukraine. And all of a sudden, you know, Speaker Pelosi's move looks a little more shrewd. And I think even you had some Republicans, certainly privately on the Hill, going, you know what, that ended up turning out a little better than perhaps we had thought. And I think that sort of gets to the essence of Pelosi's gambit, which was, I think she saw not a whole lot of downside in holding on to those articles and a whole lot of upside, betting perhaps, and probably, you know, correctly, that new revelations would come out that could possibly influence the Senate trial in a way that wouldn't have happened had she sent them over immediately.
Despite whatever the outcome might be of the trial, if it doesn't go the Democrats' way, House Speaker Pelosi said Wednesday of President Trump, quote, he has been impeached. He has been impeached forever. They can never erase that. So, you know, back to the race on the Democratic side for president, you've got a considerable talking point here, perhaps. He, you know, Trump is the first American president to run for re-election after having been impeached. So so Jacqueline promises to be an election year like none other.
Yeah, definitely. You know, not only is the Democratic nominee going to be running against an impeached president, but you also have one of the candidates at the heart of this entire thing, Joe Biden. So, you know, but the president's actions that ultimately led to his impeachment were in response to the Democratic primary in a way. So it's definitely going to be a talking point. It's definitely going to be something that Democrats are going to be able to run on. But at the same time, you know, if this trial goes the way that we're expecting it to go, Trump is going to be able to say, you know, I was exonerated by the Senate. They said that I did nothing wrong. It was a perfect phone call. I was working for the American people, and Democrats are just out to get me. So, you know, it's going to be up to American voters to kind of look at both sides of that and decide how that's going to impact their decision at the polls come November.
And Sam Brody, indeed, President Trump has been on the road trying to shore up his campaign for reelection. He's been holding political rallies, and the reception, you know, as usual from the group who follows him has been rather good, to say the least. Even rapturous sometimes.
Right. And I think that, you know, the impeachment process has been an opportunity for the president and his allies to really, you know, solidify that support from his base. They've fundraised off of this, you know, pretty prodigiously. I mean, worth noting that Democrats have too. But, you know, this is another point in the president's overall sort of case and appeal, which is to his base, that he's somebody who the establishment is out to get, that Democrats are out to get, because he's fighting for people, and impeachment is another example of that. So, you know, there is, we talk a lot about this sort of really Trump support being so like baked in at a certain level that there are, you know, that there's a percentage of people, you know, whether you want to call that 30 or 35 or however many percent of the American public who will be with him no matter what. I think the question is, does impeachment affect those folks in the middle? And, you know, it's January right now and people vote a lot later in the year. And knowing the way the news goes and what could happen, that's many political years ahead. November 2020. So do people even remember impeachment? And if so, how? Mm.
Jacqueline Thompson, to the trial itself, what is President Trump's role in the impeachment proceedings?
You know, he'll be most represented by his legal team, who it was announced earlier this hour while we were on the air, will now include figures like Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz and Robert Ray, who took over for Ken Starr in the special counsel investigation. So it's really that team that's going to be leading the charge in defending him. Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, is going to be leading that defense. Trump has described him as the strong, silent type. He's kept, you know, more of a behind-the-scenes profile, but has come under a lot of fire for legal positions that he's taken in letters to the House during the impeachment inquiry, where he said, we're not going to participate in this at all. I believe there is a provision in the Senate rules that would allow for Trump to be called in as a witness to, you know, testify as part of this trial. But
what is the likelihood of that?
I mean, you had Rudy Giuliani telling him not to talk to Mueller. Yeah. And now you have a case here where, you know, if Trump goes down the Senate floor and he lies the way he does every single day about any number of items, then, you know, that opens him up to other forms of culpability. If I were the president's lawyers, I would tell him to stay far away. At the same time, the president loves a good TV rating. And who wouldn't tune in to see the president testify in his own impeachment trial?
Sam Brody, if you were one of the president's lawyers, what would you advise?
Oh, I don't know if I can get into that, Tori, but I think Jacqueline is right. And I think the Mueller example is instructive. The president's team really fought tooth and nail to ensure that, you know, the special counsel and his team did not sit down with the president, you know, in person under oath. The president ultimately submitted written questions to the special counsel's queries. I think that's a guidebook for how they view, you know, the president and you know, perhaps the president feels personally that he would want to go on. I mean, I think one thing to think about is how he views the trial and how Senate Republicans view the trial. The president's attitudes might change on a day-to-day basis. He's gone from saying, well, the trial should be dismissed, or actually there should be a long trial because this is all exculpatory and I didn't do anything wrong. Mitch McConnell wants this to be over with as quickly as possible while checking the required procedural boxes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and also he has his allies, John Cornyn, for example, top senator, has said this shouldn't be a circus. I mean, if you want to talk about circus, I mean, the president of the United States going on the floor of a Senate, you know, for an impeachment trial, that would be a remarkable historic event. And that certainly would not be the low key sort of staid proceedings that perhaps some Republican senators would like to see go.
Just want to quickly get to some more news of the week. Also on Thursday, the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office found that the Trump administration had violated the law when it withheld nearly $400 million in security assistance for Ukraine for a, quote, policy reason, even though Congress had already allocated the money. Does this report lead to any legal action? Do we know, Sam?
So, yeah, we don't know necessarily, and I think people are still trying to figure that out. So,
the administration has already been moving funds, say, from the Defense Department to the building of the wall. I mean, it's not the first. I mean, we're not talking about a foreign country here, but they're shifting funds that Congress has already approved. Correct.
Right. So I think so what's at hand is not necessarily the shifting of funds, but is the not spending of funds. Mm. So what the GAO found was that the administration violated an obscure law called the Impoundment Control Act, which basically says Congress appropriates funds. And if an administration decides not to spend those funds, they are going against the will of Congress and violating Congress's constitutional authority to appropriate funds. So that's what they found happened with the Ukraine security assistance. So a GAO finding, you know, it was interesting talking to Republicans about it yesterday because they go, well, GAO is wrong. They brought up past examples of GAO making similar allegations against past presidents, including Barack Obama. I personally don't remember how those panned out. But, you know, I think what's most likely to see is, you know, the House Appropriations Chair, for example, Democrat Nita Lowey of New York, said in a statement about this yesterday that Democrats would be looking into legislative avenues in order to address this and possibly prevent a scenario like this from happening again in the future.
Okay. Jacqueline Thompson, let's talk about viewing or listening to the trial. Senators, it can apparently ask that, you know, C-SPAN coverage go dark at times to go into closed session, which means journalists are shut out, too. How do you get around this to cover critical moments?
You know, that's really a tough question. And Sam and I were just talking about this, actually. The rules that have been put in place at the Senate in terms of press coverage have, you know, made it really difficult for reporters to talk to senators and you know, be able to be in the room where everything is happening and also be able to give real-time updates to the American public. You know, we're at a point where everything is tweeted out as it's happening. The Senate gallery rules, the place where you're allowed to be as you watch the Senate chamber, you're not allowed to have any electronics with you in there.
No laptops, right?
No laptops, no cell phones, or at least not an on-cell phone. And, you know, you just have your notebook and you have your eyes and you have your memory. So, you know, hopefully these senators start to reconsider this a little bit. But I think Sam could probably talk a little bit better about what his experience is like covering it right now.
Sam Brody?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So, you know, so for some context, you can never bring electronics into the Senate chamber, no matter what they're doing. Some folks have had tried to change that. But, you know, it's really been restrictive outside of the Senate floor. So just to give a little bit of background, I mean, the Hill is one of the best places to report really anywhere. You have, you know, almost total access to members of Congress to follow them around, to walk with them, to ask them questions, and to really get their perspectives, hold them accountable. And during the trial, that access has been severely curtailed. So I'll give an example. There's a escalator that goes from the hallway where senators walk to the Capitol from their office buildings to the elevators where they go to the Senate floor. We normally walk with those senators up the stairs. We sometimes awkwardly try to get around them and you know, put our recorders up to them and ask them questions as they go up the escalator. During the trial, we are not allowed to go with them on the escalator.
And the reasoning
is? There hasn't been a whole lot of justification from the authorities as to specifically why these restrictions are required. They point to order and safety and all these things generally to justify these really, you know, intense restrictions. And I think in certain contexts, you know, heightened scrutiny and security in an environment like this is certainly justifiable. But in terms of, you know, walking up the stairs with a senator, I think a lot of us see no real reason why an impeachment trial means we can't do that.
Jacqueline Thompson, what does all this say about transparency?
It doesn't speak well for transparency. You know, Senate Republicans have the majority of the chamber. They have control over the rules. It is Senate Rules Committee Chairman Roy Blunt who is in charge of this. And what it says to me is that a lot of senators think, all right, let's just try to get this over with as fast as we can with minimal exposure and danger for our sitting president, who is the leader of our party right now. You know, it's not a good sign of what is potentially to come down the line. You know, you would hope that you would get more access to the federal government and to different parts of it. You know, even yesterday, as Chief Justice John Roberts was sitting down, people started unveiling legislation to try to get cameras in federal courts and saying, you know, I hope he gets used to being on camera so we can get more access that way. But now it just seems like we're going to get limited access to a pivotal moment in American history, and that is a shame.
And Sam, in about 15 seconds, your thoughts on this transparency?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think I hope there is some reconsideration that goes on. You know, this is just such an important moment. And the Capitol is a place of unfettered access. It for us, for reporters, we're there to try and inform the public. And I hope it can stay that way.
Quick question here. Randall, if Trump is reelected, can he be impeached a second time? Yes or no? Jacqueline, do we know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he sure can. He could get impeached again now.
Okay. Well, that about wraps up our conversation for the moment. Sam Brody is congressional reporter for The Daily Beast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jacqueline Thompson, reporter for the National Law Journal. Great to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
Our engineer today has been Adam Staniszewski. Our producer is Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Good to have you along for Radio Times.